You are tuned in to Cultivating Indigenous Voices from KXEI Tucson, hosted and produced by Tina Andrew. Today, I have Dr. Sherry DeVore Dene, who is an assistant professor and is the principal investigator of the Nyehe Lab in the Department of Chemical and Environmental Engineering at the University of Arizona, and law student Jiraiya Calado and Nevis Vasquez, graduate student, both from the University of Arizona. Nyehe Lab is the first Dene and women-led chemical and environmental engineering laboratory at the University of Arizona. Today, I'll be stepping back into more of a listening role because we have a fantastic guest who will be leading this conversation. Dr. Sherry DeVore brings a wealth of experience and will be guiding today's discussion with our two college interns, exploring their journeys, perspectives, and what they are learning as they step into the professional world, working alongside Dr. Sherry DeVore. With that, I'm happy to hand things over to Dr. DeVore now.
Thank you so much, Tina, and thank you for having us today. We're so excited to share space with you to talk to members of the Tucson and Arizona communities to highlight the really important and exciting work we're doing at Nyehe Lab at the University of Arizona. So my name is Sherry DeVore. I come from the beautiful high desert community of Crown Point, New Mexico, in eastern Dene or Dene lands. And I currently serve as assistant professor and principal investigator of Nyehe Lab in the Department of Chemical and Environmental Engineering here at the U of A. And I want to stop for a moment to explain the name of our group, our research community, which is Nyehe. And quite simply, it refers to a plural collective. It's a pronoun that translates to the word ours, belonging to all of us, to the students and myself, to members of the community, our collaborators, and our research partners. And I opted to use this word, not just as a word, but putting into practice, decentering myself as the investigator and really giving voice to students and people that are trained in our community. I'm also an associate faculty member with the Indigenous Resilience Center, and they are one of many that have been responsible for recruiting me here to the U of A, where previously I was doing my postdoc at Stanford University, and previous to that, I completed my PhD at the University of New Mexico under the mentorship of Dr. Jose Serrato in civil and environmental engineering. I also want to acknowledge my mentors at home, my cultural mentors, my family, my elders, who I believe provide the foundation for the values that I carry forward. And a lot of their stories live through me. And I feel I'm merely a conduit, right, for sharing teachings and putting into practice values that enhance this experience in the research space. So I also want to take just 5 seconds, if I may, to acknowledge protocol.
Absolutely.
And formally introduce myself. So I very quickly introduce my clans from both of my parents and my maternal grandparents and paternal grandparents. So we are a matriarchy, and clans are carried through the women in the family. So more about uplifting student voices. I have with me today two very phenomenal women that I've had the pleasure of working with in my two-year tenure here so far at the U of A. I'll let them go into more detail on their identities and their stories. But one of the themes that has emerged from this work together has to do with mentorship. Outside of what traditional academic mentorship looks like, there's so much room to add the beauty of community to really center human growth, because I feel as mentors, we're not just cultivating the science and the research, we're cultivating human beings here and propelling them forward into the trajectories of their not just careers, but their life paths. And that small role that I can play, I'm very honored that I can be a small part of that. Another theme that has emerged from our work is rematriation, connecting back to the land, and relationality being the tenant for our responsibility to communities and to the land. Another theme emerging is our data sovereignty. Exactly what we're doing right now is having autonomy and control over the stories that we tell about ourselves and the stories that we tell about our people as being powerful, as being abundant in knowledge, when really many stories told about our work, especially from the extractive industry, which is what we study, mining issues, fire issues, those stories are told from a deficit perspective. While we can acknowledge a lot of that loss and destruction tied to the land shows up in our families, in our communities, in adverse ways, we can also acknowledge the generational love, the abundance of knowledge and love that our people carry, and that I hope I'm instilling in my group, in our community, that there's so much that we can ground ourselves in that highlights our unique strengths and our assets, and each of them brings such a beautiful and unique perspective and make this community such a joy. And to that, I'll also tell you more about the science that we do. So we've been working for the past 2 years, mostly at the bench and laboratory scale, to understand from all the different scenarios around mobility and uptake of contamination. Contaminants like arsenic, like uranium, like copper, into bioabsorbents that are already equipped on the land. And I, as an investigator for the past 12 years, have been working really diligently to illuminate mobilization pathways, characterizing what contaminants are out there, how they occur. Now we're shifting focus on recovery and restoration, on designing specific treatment, using engineering process treatment tools, using multiple knowledge systems, using different areas of science. We are inspired by the landscape. We're not creating new technologies. We're leveraging what microorganisms already know to do to respond to abiotic stresses, to respond to stresses like climate change, mm-hmm. and to contamination. So we work with fungi, we work with bacteria, we work with plants, wow. and the local desert mushroom called Padaxis, who can potentially accumulate copper from mine tailing wow. waste. And alongside of that very, very technical work, I might add, is the need to center protocol, consent, mm-hmm. data sovereignty, and making sure we're navigating this as respectfully as possible to safeguard that data
yeah.
as belonging to our people and to communities. Mm-hmm. And Jiraiya has been really great at leading this effort. We're writing a publication right now on what this could look like in practice for science and engineering. And that is incredibly important and missing mm-hmm. actually from the space and from the discussion. Yeah.
Are you guys involved in the Indigenous Data Sovereignty Summit coming
yes,
up?
Yeah. So that is coming up in April mm-hmm. here. And I want to shout out Native Nations Institute because they are leading globally efforts and scholarship and putting into practice what that actually means here in Tucson, Arizona. And there are folks all across the world in
yeah.
this consortia of scholars. Mm-hmm. Lydia Jennings is one that I have to shout out, Stephanie Carroll, many others. And we're looking forward to continuing to work with them, build connections with them at Native Nations Institute. I love that this area of work also highlights the inherent abundance of knowledge and data that are not written, that are not numerical or statistics. Data genealogy is those stories told through our families that are needing protection, that are needing some operationalized protocol to make sure users of the data understand who that data belongs to, and if it's going to be used for some effort, that there's some collective benefit. This is a nice segue to introduce Jiraiya and some of the work that she's leading on Indigenous data sovereignty within the context of science and engineering.
Stanjo, Dry Colado, Shiji, Shima, Jennifer Colado, Shikae, Pa Colado Jr., Shichua, Esther Ramirez, Shisoye, Pa Colado Sr. Hello, my name is Jiraiya Colado. I am a student here at the University of Arizona, majoring in law with a minor in animal science. I will be graduating this December with my bachelor's, and I am from Dulce, New Mexico. I am part of the Hickory Apache Nation.
Thank you, Jiraiya. So you came from a science background as your minor, and then you transitioned to law. What brought you to that decision, and how did your cultural or community background influence that path?
Yeah, so growing up, I was raised by a single mother, so I was always inspired by her to do better for, like, to give back to her and do better for myself. And so when I was in high school, I was new. I wanted to go to college. I never knew exactly for what. Like, I had areas of interest as well as things I was passionate about that could correspond to a degree at school. So once I went to school, I still really didn't have no idea. And it was quite a journey. And I remember talking to my mom, like, how can I come back? And, like, I want to help you. I want to help my nieces and nephews. I want to set a better example. I want us to prosper in this society. And she would always be like, you know what you want to do, just give it some time. Like, whatever you do, I'm gonna be proud of you. I said okay. And then in 2023, I was a royalty for my tribe. I was Miss Hickory Apache, and I feel like that really opened up my eyes and was like, oh, this is what my community needs, and this is what my community needs help with. Like, this is how I could best serve them. And talking to, like, my tribal leaders, as well as going to these places where I had to represent my tribe and my people, and just talking to everyone all around gave me an idea of, like, where I can potentially come back and help them. Not only, like, help my family, but help my community as a whole. And I think law really does that for me, because I feel like over the years I've learned that, you know, tribal communities are always being taken advantage of, and there's nothing, like, reciprocal about the relationships and stuff they form. It's just strictly transactional. And so it's okay, well, I want to come back and be the middleman of that. Like, I want to step in and be like, all right, I have my community's best interest at heart, and this is what I want to do for us. And so that's why I chose law. It's definitely something that also resonates with me, because my grandmother, she was the first Native American woman in my tribe to be a vice president. So I feel like a part of her, like, stays within me. It's like empowers me to, like, keep going, and, like, this is what I should be doing.
Yes.
Yeah. So she's been, like, inspirational, and, like, I learn more about her every day, and I'm like, wow, she was really powerful woman, and just following within those footsteps, it makes me feel like I am definitely where I need to be.
Absolutely. That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you, Jiraiya. Thank you for sharing all of that. I guess a follow-up would be just for you to share your perspective around why it's so important to have Native voices in STEM fields, especially around land, water, and community well-being.
Yeah, for my tribe, we're always praying about the water and the land and future generations to come. And it's always been connected with us, and it's always been much bigger than what it may be for other people who are not Native. And, you know, our ancestors too knew a lot about where we come from and how everything, like, corresponds with each other. So having that perspective in higher academia and positions, I feel like, is really beneficial. And they could also come in and not have Native communities as transactional, like I said, and make it more like a relationship based and giving back and putting those research practices into place, as it's not really done a lot. It's mostly just talked about, like, this is how we can do better. But having people in those positions, like, all right, let's put it into practice. Let's make it better by implementing it into the systems that are made, like, not run by non-natives.
a lot of that, what Jiraiya has shared, has showed up in our scholarship together. And I think the mentorship that she's received and the community that we have in the lab has really enhanced our ability to have these discussions together. Yeah. And so lastly, Jiraiya, I want to ask, given this experience with me and with the lab, what advice would you give to Native youth or students that are curious about potentially this pathway?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, Native students, they already belong into this STEM discipline. Like, our ancestors were scientists way before this was even, like, STEM was even a thing. Dr. DeVore told me, like, we are the OG scientists.
Agreed.
And their curiosity isn't something that's, like, accidental, but rather comes from ancestral knowledge. Mm-hmm.
It is, and it's our truth. It's generations of knowledge. I share this sentiment in teaching with as many people as I can. Like, we are in here in this room together. We are standing in our positions because our ancestors loved us. They had the foresight for us. They planned for us without knowing us, without knowing what we would look like. They knew we would be here. So in their planning, they left teachings, they left songs, they left ceremonies, they left stories, they left our language, they left repositories, still out there on the land, living, breathing, thriving. And it's our job to think about, okay, those little babies to come in some generations that are not here yet, we don't know what they look like, but they're coming. What tools are we going to give to them? What love are we going to transfer to them to make sure they have what they need to live in this world, to cultivate relationships together and to take care of the land? And with that segue, I want to give Nieves a chance to tell some of her stories. And us standing here in the room, let me tell you, was the vision. We've been thinking about what modalities of communication can we explore to share our work, to share knowledge, but also listen to. One of those modalities was radio.
Wow, yeah. Cool.
We've been dreaming, we've been scheming, you know? And yeah, Nieves has done such a wonderful job pulling together an online repository of our work. It's a work in progress, but she just defended her master's on some of these efforts. So I want to give her a chance to share her story, share her voice.
Amazing.
So, Nieves.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Tina, for having me. My name is Bianca Nieves Vasquez. I graduated with my Master's of Science from the University of Arizona at the School of Natural Resources and the Environment in the Water Society and Policy Program. I come from parents that were born in the Eastern Sierra Madres in Mexico. I myself was born in Texas, and as a first-generation student, it was a journey to figure out what I wanted to pursue. And the context behind that is that I feel that I have a cultural and active responsibility to the Huachichil community in the Eastern Sierra Madre, as well as my Mexican community. And I have felt a very special privilege to be a guest here at this university and work alongside other Indigenous and Native students in our shared pride and responsibility that we have to give back to not just our own community, but everyone. It feels like a very abundant opportunity. And that was something very unique that it took me 10 years in higher education to find. And so that's been a really great experience. What brought me to my science degree was that I graduated from my undergrad in like pre-med, like psychology, not really knowing what I wanted to pursue other than I knew I had, but I felt proud to have a responsibility to always bring something back to my community, whether that was going to be a healthcare position or otherwise. But when I graduated, it was in 2020 into the beginning stages of the pandemic. And at that point, nothing really made sense in the social structure that we were living in. I reflected on, was like, well, one thing that does make sense is my relationship to the land. So I'm just going to go farm. Like, literally, I graduated, nothing to do with my bachelor's degree in like healthcare. I just went to the farm and I started growing food. I started helping the local community get access to fresh food. And my dad, he was like, what are you up to? Because I wasn't living with him at the time. And I was like, I'm working on a farm. And he's like, what are you doing? He's like, you know, we come from farmers. We come from, you know, generations of people who know how to work with the land, know what crops to plant and when to harvest them. I left that community in hopes that you would get a better future. And I said, well, now you know that I value those teachings. And like, when nothing made sense, this did. And that to him, I noticed, like, also shifted his perspective, where I think as diasporic or indigenous people, we're made to feel like we're not bringing something to the table, or we have to leave like our communities and traditions to further ourselves. And I think in that moment, he got to challenge that perspective. And in some ways, it made him proud to know that despite being the first generation high school graduate and undergraduate, I was like, I'm going to go farm. And he was like, oh, wow. Like, you still want to be continuing the traditions like of your family. Like, and I think from then on, I was searching for that feeling to continue, because I that also made me realize like how important it was to recognize the innate knowledge, engineering and science that our community has, regardless of a academic education, if that makes sense. So that's how I got to my program. And I wanted to explore interdisciplinary methods to talk about water management, but also the social aspects around that.
That's amazing work. I mean, thank you. Yes, thank you both, or all of you, for the work that you all are doing. Whether you realize or not, there are some pretty big impacts in what you are doing. And the fact that you're thinking of future generations and just putting in the work right now, and you kind of have an idea, or your lived experiences is what kind of helped you to get to where you're at today. That's amazing. And I'm so glad that I had an opportunity to meet the both of you, and Dr. DeVore as well, and to just highlight what's happening in the realm of the lab, in the realm of your personal life. So thank you so much for all being so open and sharing that.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate the story that both Nieves and Drya have shared. And to wrap up our conversation, I really wanted to engage with Nieves specifically on kind of what we learn from each other. Each of us, I feel, in the group and just in this journey of our learning and our growth, academic and non-academic learning, there's something to be said about the gratitude for this exchange of knowledge and for the growth, which is both beautiful and sometimes very challenging, very painful. But it is my pleasure and honor to help cultivate that, help you navigate that just as a person. And I guess the question that I have for us is, what have you learned from me? And I can share what I've learned from each of you in this mentor-mentee relationship model, you know, compared to other conventional academic models. And if we could weave in some of like your master's work in that, that would be really cool. The toolkit that you developed as well.
I really love this question, because it's really going to tie in the fact that this toolkit that we're talking about, it's all centered on reciprocity and relationality, which sound like very like complicated words, but it actually is very simple in that we really value the relationships that we're building with each other, how we're relating to each other in terms of the responsibilities we have for each other, but all the work that we're doing and the responsibility we have for all the communities that will benefit from it. And how are we giving thanks and also accepting thanks? Because that was also hard for me to accept, you know, being appreciated in a community, because it's not always that you feel included or welcomed in a classroom or like a lab or on a field study site. And so it's been a really great experience of reciprocity in the mentor-mentee relationship. And in addition to that, it's the ability to, as the mentee, also mentor, which usually you would expect that once you get your degree, then you can become the mentor. Like, once you've published a paper, you can mentor someone on how to publish. But in our lab, we're seen as a mentor just by being there and showing up. And we are told that we have something to offer and can contribute to our community right away, especially when it comes to inspiring and including other students or the next generation or any community member that wants to learn more about what we're doing. We're not expected to have a certain degree or a certain credential to be seen as a mentor. And that's been really unique in that I haven't found that anywhere else. So that's been a very impactful mentor-mentee relationship, not just with Dr. DeVore, but the ability that we're also able to experience being the mentor to other students. That's really powerful, and it shows how much we value a person for the abundant knowledge they're bringing with them just by being part of their own communities, as opposed to what credential an institution has given them to have that mentorship title. I think our voices are really important because when it comes to STEM, from my experience before joining our lab and meeting other Indigenous scholars through the Indigenous Resilience Center, I felt like science was very deficit-oriented in that what's missing, what's not working, what are they lacking, what needs to be new or innovative, versus when I'm interacting with Native and Indigenous scientists, we're asking what's here. What can we learn from the earth? What's in front of us? What can we learn from each other? What can we, again, gain? And what can we not just gain, but like share? What relationships do we have? And what is the already like abundant platform that we're coming in from? I think Indigenous scientists are coming in with a set of tools and knowledge that other non-Indigenous scientists don't have that actually benefit us. And it's about figuring out how to best share that perspective, because we do believe it benefits everyone to approach STEM from an abundance mindset as opposed to a deficit, which I think has hurt communities regardless of where they're from more than it's helped them. And so it's really important for Native and Indigenous scientists to be here, because they're scientists just by being a member of their community. We come from engineers, we come from farmers, we come from mathematicians, we come from medical professionals, we come from so many very abundant in knowledge backgrounds that really benefit us in that how we're contributing to the STEM field like otherwise. And so that's why it's really important. And in my master's project, I really wanted to focus on how is science being communicated. A lot of times I felt that there was some really great research being done in an institution, but it was never returning back to a community or leaving a journal article. And so I wanted to reflect on what does it mean to challenge, like the way that there's like a line of how research is done, where the scientist is the person in the institution, not the community member that lives or is experiencing something out in the world that needs to be addressed. So the scientist is the one that does the research, has the answers, does the hypothesis, and not always lets a community know what the outcome was. They will keep that data, they will use it for their research, they will keep it in the institution, and they'll just publish it, and then there's a paywall to access the journal article. So what would it mean to challenge that? And so with the guidance of Dr. Sherry DeVore, we thought about what does it mean to have a toolkit that both scientists and community members can use that really challenges the hierarchy that is seen in science and STEM and engineering of like the scientist is up here in the community, they get the information later. What does it mean for the community to actually be the first scientist in that effort? And what are they able to share to a quote unquote scientist in an institution that actually like benefits the community, where the community is the one that's seen with the most abundant knowledge? And so we dreamt that up as a toolkit repository, but we feel like it has a lot of potential to expand from there. And we talked about the both tangible and intangible tools that could be in like a toolkit. So if you imagine like a toolbox and you're thinking about what kind of tools would be beneficial for an engineering research project, you might think of making sure you have a lab coat or a biosafety hood, a microscope. But there's also tools that are really beneficial to an engineer that we also discuss. And those are some of the intangible tools like relationality. What are your relationships to others? What kind of spiritual or cultural protocols do you have that could really benefit the respectful way to address a problem that you want to face? What are some of the responsibilities and like ethics that you bring in? And those are very, very important that a lot of times some labs don't have for themselves. But we believe that these intangible and tangible tools together can really sustain a very respectful and reciprocal scientific communication effort. And we do believe in like the diversity of how science can be communicated, radio being one of them. For example, like in my community back in Mexico, radio is one of the most important ways to communicate with each other, especially for Indigenous people. That's how they get their news. And a lot of our stories are oral. And so radio is one of the ways that we believe science
can be communicated, and it's very important to have something like that. But also stories, zines, posters, dances, traditional like games even. But it's also important to publish and to have presentations. But it was a very powerful experience because I did struggle to find faculty advisors that felt like what I was trying to communicate was valuable. They kept asking me like, well, what's the point? Or like, what do you mean? Or like, how is that science? When I would tell them like, I want to focus on how communities that are being researched have actually more to offer to like the world than like a scientist and a like an institution. And they were like, I don't understand. And so I was like, oh no, like I'm struggling. Like, can I even graduate? I'm not feeling very like supported. And it wasn't until I talked with Sherry about what I was experiencing. And she's like, oh, I understand exactly what you're saying. I was like, oh my gosh, that's why it's important for us to like be in these spaces, because it makes sense for us that yes, we're scientists and we're researchers, regardless of like what credential we have, but it can be hard for others to understand that abundance perspective. And I think once people hear about it, they're actually like, oh, and so we do see this. I see this as a revolution, I hope. But it also brings in that data sovereignty where we have to be responsible and respectful of how we move forward. But I think there's a really good path ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you for articulating, Nieves. And also the validation of our shared understanding of the external pressure to produce, to be machines and not humans, and for a product. Right. And for some of those generations of knowledge and the exchange of knowledge to be transactional, which it's not. It doesn't make sense for us. And I've, in my years, have really grappled with this, showing up authentically to spaces and to research initiatives while not compromising my own values. And in doing so, you know, I've been working on this very rudimentary but evolving research framework that we use to inform the work we do in the lab. From all intersectional scholars. And so I've got these incredible Native women, but I also have queer folks. I have all genders. I have local, national students with all different like lived experiences that matter, that bring value to our community. This is what you get. This is me being authentic as a mentor. And if this aligns with what you want for your growth and your career, then let's do it. So each one of them in the group has been just phenomenal at leading, mentoring, asking questions, being curious, being respectful, sitting back when they have to sit back and just learn, and also being really great allies too. And the research framework is something I have in the very first meeting, the conversation around how we can combine very rigorous technical tools that I've been trained to use, like various spectroscopy tools, high-powered x-ray measurement tools, microscopy tools, modeling, math, physics, aqueous chemistry tools, plant physiology, microbial ecology and biology, and combine that with relational accountability to land, water, and communities, and use that as our mechanism, both considering the physical and the metaphysical. The tools that I just highlighted are very much physical, but the metaphysical expands beyond what we can conceive in our minds of, okay, well, how do Sherry's family values, how does kinship, how do teachings from my people and my ancestors show up in my work? That's the metaphysical that you can't explain or touch or feel. And I feel like each of these women that we're in conversation with bring that value to the space. And we're all on the same page about, okay, we see the land as resilient. So much to learn from the land. We see the recovery and restoration that the land can offer us by being in relation to the land. Like our healing as people is tied to the healing of the land. And what we become inspired by for the technical part of this is like fungi, for example, by bacteria, for example, and by plants, to inform these engineering strategies that are really grounded in both scientifically robust and culturally grounded practices.
Amazing. Wow. Well, thank you so much. Yeah. And if any of you have any shout outs that you want to share? Any thank yous?
Shout out to everyone in the lab, both past, present, and future. It's a really great community, and it's great to see both Native and non-Native from all backgrounds just come together for a shared responsibility for the work that we're doing. So shout out to everyone from the lab. Couldn't do any of this without every single one of us.
Shout out to Dr. DeVore. She has really been an important person in my life to like help shape my academic career and journey. And for her, I'm like eternally grateful that our paths crossed. And my mom for always being so supportive, even though sometimes she doesn't know what I'm doing. And my sisters and my brother for encouraging me to keep going and be there. And my community for being my support too when I post stuff and being there when I need them too.
So many people. Shout out to Crown Point, New Mexico, my home, my parents, Emerson and Gloria, my uncle Wilson, mentors, gosh, anyone that's poured into me, prayed for me, fed me, shared inspiration, shared hope. Layla and Demp, of course, the Indigenous Resilience Center, the Howery Foundation at the University of Arizona, my department and colleagues at Chemical and Environmental Engineering. Glory be to Creator and Holy Ones for this beautiful privilege and opportunity for this pathway in my own personal growth, but as a professional. Thank you so much.
I appreciate, you know, the knowledge, the shared experiences, and the work that you are continuing to do. And if there was anyone out there listening now and was more curious about your work, where could they go to learn more about that?
Yes, this is a really great question, because one of the closing inspirations coming to mind right now is, please, if you have a kid, even if they're in kindergarten, and you could dream for them or they could dream for themselves to work in a space like this, tell them about us. Tell them about all of the dreamers and innovators and thinkers and schemers putting into motion now what they could benefit from. Come work with us. Reach out to us. And you can do that by going to our website, www.nihi, which is nihilab.com. I am Sherry DeVore, and thank you so much for this time and space. And thanks for folks out there listening. We really appreciate you.
You are tuned in to Cultivating Indigenous Voices. From KXEI Tucson, hosted and produced by Tina Andrew. Today, I have Dr. Sherry DeVore Dene, who is an assistant professor and is the principal investigator of the Nyehe Lab in the Department of Chemical and Environmental Engineering at the University of Arizona, and law student Jariah Calado and Nevis Vasquez, graduate student, both from the University of Arizona.